Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Elon is essentially operating, in some respects, like the chief operating officer of the United States. Who does he report to? He reports to the president. Or maybe the president reports to him. That Constitution doesn't deal with that. But
it is an extra legal arrangement, clearly. Right?
One might say illegal.
Hello, everyone. This is George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. He's George Conway. I am not Sarah Longwell. I'm her best friend, JVL, sitting in for her. George, everything's terrible, like normal.
Everything's awful. Everything's just going exactly according to plan.
So,
disaster, illegal, you got it.
Well, I'm so happy we get to have this conversation today because I had a lot of questions about legal stuff today, starting with John Roberts stepping in last night to issue a stay of a decision. I'll try to set the table for 15 seconds here for people, and then you can just go. We had a federal judge who has been telling the government, you got to make payments, make these payments for things that, funds that the government has mandated to be dispersed to pay for things which are already done. And the federal government keeps saying, no. And so they did there was a deadline of midnight last night. At the last minute, the government appealed up to the Supreme Court, and John Roberts said, yeah, let's push that deadline back. We want to think about this. Yeah. Is this presidential immunity too? What's going on here?
No, you can't attach any real significance to what.
Okay, great.
Roberts,
tell me everything.
Last night. Basically, okay, what this case is about, this is about the USAID and the State Department, basically cutting off contractors and funds being disposed of by USAID and trying to basically eliminate the agency. The district court basically issued a TRO, a temporary restraining order, which is something you do in a very preliminary, it's the most preliminary temporary relief you can have. And basically said, stop doing this until we can figure out what's legal and what's not. And the plaintiffs probably have shown some illegality here because they're not spending money that Congress has appropriated. And what happened was the government kept cutting off funds anyway. And they came back and their excuse to the district court was when the plaintiff said, hey, they're violating a court order. And I'm grossly oversimplifying here because it is an absolute mess what's going on here. When you have litigation about so much, so fast, and you're just getting preliminary rulings from a court, it's hard to see which way is up. And there's a lot of confusion and the government's doing its best, I think, to create confusion. Okay, that being said, what happened was the district court issued a restraining order saying just stop doing what you're doing and keep paying people. And then there was a line in the court's order that said, of course, you get to review contracts to see if they're legal. If you're examining particular individual contracts, you're entitled to do that. And I'm not stopping you from doing this. But this blanket termination of payments, I'm telling you to stop that. And so what happened was they kept on stopping contracts and they went back to the district court and said, well, we're going through the contracts one by one. I was like, okay, yeah, you went through 5,000 of them in the last, 5 hours in the middle of the night. I mean, and that's what the plaintiffs were saying. And essentially the judge got fed up with this and basically said, you got to pay all this money out and by midnight tonight or last night.
Like KGB and, Bill and Rounders, pay him, pay that man his money.
Pay him, yes. It's really because the government was screwing around and kind of trying to figure out ways around the court's order and trying to create
judges don't take kindly to that.
Judges hate
right?
that.
Okay.
And so what happened was then the Solicitor General took it up to the Court of Appeals and didn't even wait for the Court of Appeals to rule. And the Court of Appeals ultimately, in here in the District of Columbia, denied relief and then took it up to Justice Roberts like last night. And, you know, justices get to act as quote unquote circuit justice. One justice can act on an application basically to tee it up to the rest of the court. Sometimes they can issue orders, you know, when nobody else is around and they're forced to, they can do all sorts of things. But all Chief Justice Roberts did was, well, we got to see what the other side's got to say. And it's the middle of the night. So, let's put a temporary administrative stay in place so the government doesn't have to comply.
A stay on the TRO.
The order that the court issued to enforce its TRO. This is how tangled
it is. Gotcha.
And basically said to the plaintiffs, you have till noon today. So they've got another 53 minutes as this thing, it's 11:07 as we are taping this. So they got 53 minutes to come up with a response to say why the application to the Supreme Court should be denied. And, you know, this is not an extraordinary circumstance when the Supreme Court gets something in the middle of the night and doesn't have the other side's view. And the government's making a big deal. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot of money. So they can't figure it out in the middle of the night and get together and talk about it. So they put it off if they can. And that's what all they did here. What the interesting ruling will be after this document gets filed by the plaintiffs in 53 minutes. And then we'll see what the Supreme Court does. But even if whatever the Supreme Court does here, I have to warn people, it is not necessarily a harbinger of what's to come, because this is everything right now is very confused and very sui generis because the government's creating maximum confusion. And there are so many different grounds right now that a court could go off for procedural reasons and so on and so forth. It's too early right now to see where this stuff is going to go. Ultimately, there will be more litigation that is not quite as fast paced that's going to decide a lot of the issues that are being presented by the conduct of the government today.
Well, I hope it won't.
I know everybody's like, what's it going to do? They're all in the Supreme Court's in the tank. We'll see in 6 months. We're not going to see in 6 hours unless they say something that's really remarkable. And I have a feeling they're just going to find some easy way to deny it or modify it or something like that, that just sort of puts everything off to another day. That's a guess, but. Who knows?
So going back to your point about judicial psychology and judges not liking it when lawyers screw around with them, right? I mean, the judges will be open to novel ideas, but they don't want to feel like the lawyers standing in front of them are intentionally fucking with them, right?
Yes. They don't like to do that. But when they have a feeling that the lawyers are intentionally fucking with them, watch out. And I think that the Justice Department
that is happening a lot isn't it? Of it.
That is absolutely happening as we speak. We've seen it in a number of cases already. And there's a couple of cases that are presenting the question of, and I know we'll probably get to this later, about what the fuck is DOGE, who is running it, and what is it doing. And the government's been playing, you know, has been hiding the ball on that. And partly because none of the answers really help the government, and nobody wants to take responsibility for giving the wrong answer. And I'm sure part of it is if I were a lawyer in front of a judge, I'm in a circumstance where I don't really work for people who are acting necessarily in good faith or are particularly knowledgeable. And it's like, I don't want to go in front of a federal judge and give an answer that turns out to be completely false, particularly when you've got this, like there's this affidavit the other day that they submitted in one of these cases where they basically said, we don't know who's in charge of DOGE. And then later they answered it. I mean, there's, it's a combination of mass confusion, bad faith, and incompetence is what we are seeing on behalf of the government. And, you know, it looks to the outside world, it looks like, wow, they really know what they're doing because they're really, really doing all this stuff. And it's like, remember, it's easy to create destruction. Okay. If you put a bunch of monkeys at a keyboard with things that set off bombs, they're going to be very effective at blowing shit up. Okay. They will make a big noise. They may not necessarily blow the stuff up that you would want them to blow up, but they're creating, you know, it looks like, wow, they've got this plan. So, I mean, the plan here is to basically dismantle the federal government. That's right. What they're trying to do. And right. They don't care how they do it. They don't care if somebody tells them not to do it. They want to create, and a part of what they're doing is by creating so much chaos, they're going to drive people out of the government. So, this is a project that's designed to create maximum chaos and destruction. And that's if you are determined to do that, it doesn't require a lot of competence to do that. No more than it takes to say, hey, I want to destroy this bus. Let me drive it off a cliff.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Cliff.
So one of my concerns here is that the government is going to screw around like they are. And yet, at the end of the day, judges, maybe at the appellate level, maybe at the Supreme Court level, are going to bend over backwards to say, well, maybe if you squint hard, there could be a lacuna of a possibility that they kind of have half of a point, and so we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Instead of, as you say, like when one side is arguing in total bad faith and is really trying to blow things up, like the judges shouldn't be giving them the benefit of the doubt.
But they shouldn't be. But here's the problem that judges face, and this isn't a legal problem. It's more of a psychological and kind of a political problem and a practical problem.
Right. If one side is negging you, you then have to be extra fair to them.
You have to be right. You don't want to get triggered, but and that's absolutely right. You don't, I mean, one of the things that, Trump, I don't think Trump was intentionally trying to do it, but it's something that if you've ever dealt with a narcissist in your life, they like to try to provoke you and then say, look at what you did. Okay. And that's what, Trump, we saw Trump do that in his litigation last year. You know, the civil trials, E.G. Carroll, he was trying to provoke Judge Kaplan. He was trying to provoke the trial judge in his criminal case. He likes to do that. I mean, that's one of the things. It's just instinctive in a narcissist. You made me hit you, right? That's part of the danger that's faced here. But the other thing that's going on, the dynamic that is also worrisome is, there's a big fear, at least, and this is something I've been talking about a lot because I don't think people appreciate the significance of it yet, although they're starting to, that these guys are just not going to obey court orders at the end of the day because they're going to lose a lot of this shit, particularly since the way, I mean, I saw Ben Wittes talking about this with Tim the other day, and Ben made a really, really good point, which was they're doing this in such a haphazard way, the government, the Trumpers, that they're creating these shitty records. Okay. They're not, they're saying they're doing things carefully, but it's really just all random and blunderbuss and nihilistic. They're going to lose a lot of these cases that they might have otherwise won because they're just doing it in such a willy-nilly fashion. But here's the danger. Because they're just taking on all these cases, you have to believe that they don't care what the judges say. And at the end of the day, you have to start thinking, are they really going to obey court orders? And we saw that with J.D. Vance when he said the other day, well, why should we obey court orders? And then we actually saw it yesterday on Capitol Hill At the confirmation hearings of a couple of their justice nominees, I think Emile Bove and I forget who the other others were, but they're not giving square answers on the question of, well, does the president, does the executive branch have to obey court orders? And they say, well, it depends on the phase of the moon. It's hard to say. This is hypothetical. La-da-da. You know, it could be Tuesday. I don't know. I just have no idea. You know, and the danger with that, I'm being going on over long here, is that courts are going to fear that if they enjoin the government, which they would otherwise have done in a normal administration, their orders are going to get defied. And then the system will collapse. So the courts may actually, judges may feel, I don't want to push that button. I want to, because I'm afraid that they're just going to ignore me and then we'll be able to do nothing about any of this. And, that's a problem potentially. And it's very funny too, when you think about it, because the case that everyone talks about, you learn about it in high school American government class, and you certainly study it in law school. Marbury versus Madison is the case for which that established the proposition that the courts have the final say on what the law is. But the irony was in that case, and I'm not going to go into the whole history of it, was the Chief Justice Marshall actually didn't tell the government had to do anything in that case. He said, oh, this is obviously illegal, that what the government is doing, not giving these commissions to these judges that were appointed by the last administration. But turns out, if you read carefully the Constitution, we don't have jurisdiction to say what I just said. So he basically said that we get to say what the law is, but he didn't put himself in a position where President Jefferson could give him the finger and say, I'm just going to ignore you, John. So it's a very, very weird dance that's going on here. And there are so many cases. I mean, I cannot keep track of them. I was going through. There's this wonderful litigation tracker that is on justsecurity.org. And it's just like, you cannot keep track of all these cases. There are so many cases that have been brought for so many different reasons. I mean, sometimes it's just outright violations, alleged violations of law or the Constitution, like the birthright citizenship case. And then there are a whole bunch of things. Can they fire people? Well, is it, you know, it's going to depend on who those people are, what their positions are in the government, whether they're confirmed officials or not, whether they're, you know, whether they have civil service protections, all kinds of different variations there. And then there are all sorts of other cases like can they just do what they're doing? Like, you know, is DOGE legal? Is it, can you just not spend money that was appropriated on for a particular subject? And they're going to lose a bunch of those cases. And sooner or later, we're going to face the question of, are they going to actually say, we are refusing to obey the order? The case that just went up to the Supreme Court, they're not saying, we're not refusing to obey the order. They're saying, the order, we couldn't even comply with the order,
right,
if we tried to. And plus, we have lots of, there are reasons, there are exceptions in the order we fall within there. And then they're also like, this should have been in the Federal Court of Claims because you're asking us to pay money. And they're throwing everything out there. And it's a very, very confusing. They haven't gotten to the point where they would say, we will not obey this order. That's clear as day.
Could they do that with a Supreme Court order? So this,
yeah, well, yeah,
you see
no
what I'm saying? Like the, but this is what I'm saying. Instead of saying, no, John Roberts, go suck on a lemon. Could they get an order that goes contrary to them and then just not comply with it? Right. But yeah, for like, well, you know, it's not compliable. It's not, do you see what I'm saying? Like defy it without saying
there is no difference. There is no difference as a practical matter between the enforcement of a,
right,
the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court issues an order, it basically just says, this was a, we're affirming this decision, we're reversing this decision. The ultimate order that is being obeyed when that happens is the order of the district court, which has either been affirmed, modified, right, or reversed in some fashion. So you can't really make it. It's you can't really make a distinction between these. Well,
politically, it matters, though.
Politically, right? It does matter. Yeah. If the Supreme Court says you're doing something illegal, obviously that carries more weight publicly. But in terms of the actual enforcement of the order, which is ultimately the order of the district court, there's no difference. We've talked about this. I've talked about this with Sarah. It's like the way that courts enforce their orders, generally speaking, is through the United States Marshal Service. And the United States Marshal Service, can go out, and if J.V. Last decides he doesn't want to obey a court order, the court issues an order calling for the arrest of J.V. Last to hold him in civil contempt, and it's given to a United States Marshal, and he goes out and fines you. What's your address, by the way? they find you and they arrest you, or, you know, they attach your property if you're being fined or something. And, what could happen here is the United States Marshal, the head of the Marshal Service, could basically decide, I'm not giving these orders out, to my marshals for enforcement because Donald Trump told me not to. So we could get to that point.
So let me, I was going to save this for the end, but we're here already. As a, when you're in law school, you take, one of the courses you take is like a philosophy of the law or legal philosophy or jurisprudence course where, you sort of go to the abstract ideas of what is law.
Right.
George, what is law? Because if you have some pieces of paper on file somewhere that say a bunch of stuff, but then the branch which is charged with executing and enforcing the laws simply won't do it. Does the law exist? Like what? No. I mean, what?
But that's that. You've struck the exact point. I mean, once the executive stops obeying laws, what law do we have? Right,
the gun.
And we have the law of the gun. If we don't, we basically if Chief Justice Roberts, a unanimous opinion for the Supreme Court of the United States, to use the hypothetical that you were implying, what they have to say has no more purchase with the government than you and I writing an essay together. Well, we're not promulgating law, and neither is the Supreme Court, because it's not getting enforced. And that's why everybody should be absolutely terrified.
I mean,
I hate to be the alarmist, but it's like this is
my job.
The fact that we are even talking about the possibility, and I've had this conversation with other lawyers, with professors of government who have studied comparative government. I've had this conversation with a lot of people, former judges. Nobody tells me that I'm wrong here, that this couldn't happen, because they're watching and they're seeing what these people are doing. They are essentially running roughshod over Article 1 of the Constitution, which is Congress's powers, for example, to appropriate money. And they're basically just saying, we're going to say, you appropriate that money, we're going to ignore you. We're going to ignore the statute. We're even going to ignore what the Constitution says in the Birthright Citizenship Clause. Well, if they're willing to do that in so many different ways, why are they going to obey a court order that says you shall obey the thing that you are ignoring? And I don't see them. At some point, they are going to go. I hope that I'm wrong. I would be the happiest person in the world to be absolutely 100% wrong on this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Us. Let me ask you a prudential question, because I actually have a lot of sympathy for John Roberts in this. if you were Chief Justice, and so these cases are falling before you, and you were looking at the political landscape, you're looking at Trump's approval numbers, because you have to take politics into account in all of this, and you're trying to figure out how to sustain the rule of law, would you be willing to gamble ruling against Trump on something important now? Or would you want to wait till 2027 when hopefully there was a Democratic House and then try to make your stand when there is the possibility that there could be more political purchase? Because if I were the Chief Justice, I would look around at the world and I would say to myself, huh, if we rule against him, then Trump and Elon and Mike Johnson are going to go out and say, who elected these people? They're thwarting these unelected judges are thwarting the will of the people. And John Roberts is a pointy head. And, you know, within a week,
and we
they will have they will have 49% support for that. And the Supreme Court's legitimacy will be down to like 32%. And we will lose that political fight. We are not in a position to win that political fight right now. Is that wrong?
Yes and no. Let me give you my perspective on it. You're absolutely right to pose the question in the way you've posed it, because I mean it's just what I was saying a few minutes ago, that you know, if you don't want to be out there issuing an order that they're just going to thumb their nose at, because then you are shown to be completely powerless. So that's the problem that all the courts have, and especially the Supreme Court of the United States. That said, we don't have until 2027.
Yes. Okay?
We just don't have until 20. This stuff is going to come up more quickly. And if you start caving to illegality.
It's only been 5 weeks, George. It's been five freaking weeks.
5 freaking weeks? Yeah, no. If you start, you know, these cases are right now in their preliminary stages, and right now they can dodge issues because they're just saying, we're just doing this at a preliminary stage. We're not passing on the merits. We're right. saying that, you know, we're just saying this practical matter. It should be done this way. You know, there are all sorts of procedural ways to avoid substantive questions here, which are, and rightfully so, not just because you want it, not for any political reason, but it's because we don't have complete records here on what's going on. We don't even know what Doge is actually doing in a lot of respects. We kind of know on a superficial level that they're doing bad stuff, but we don't know the details.
They do discovery?
I
mean this literally. How do you do discovery on this case to actually even find what the facts are when Doge is doing this all under the cloak of night? And there's like,
how will a court establish the facts? Well, yeah, they have to. Well, court, the way you'd establish the facts would be through discovery, but that's going to take production of documents. So you think these people are going to produce them? It would mean everybody's deposition's got to be taken, like this woman who now is supposedly the administrator of Doge, but she's on vacation in Mexico. But she's in Mexico, so she can't have her deposition taken right now. And oh my God, the Elon Musk deposition, that's just going to be fun, right? So but let's assume we get there. At some point, these cases go up to the Supreme Court. And even if they go up fully litigated, it's going to be before 2027 because there's a lot at stake. And these cases can go, you know, they may go relatively quickly. And if the court doesn't put its foot down and say, you have to obey the law, that's just going to encourage them to be even worse. So as you say, you express sympathy for Roberts. He's been in a rock and a hard place. And I think the best thing that he can do right now is to, you know, I think right now they should not be making broad pronouncements at this point. It's just too early. But at some point, they're going to have to pick, you know, one of these cases. If you're being, let's say you're being thinking of this in a political way, if you're the Supreme Court, and you got to pick the right case to say this is that you cannot do this. But if you pick the wrong case, you know, you may have that 49% that you're talking about. that will play. So, I mean, I agree with you as a political matter, as somebody who is hoping that the courts, our judicial system and the rule of law survives. I think the later the Supreme Court weighs in on some of this stuff, the better. I agree with that. But this stuff's going to come there faster than it's going to come faster than they would like.
So this is a flip. Normally the Trump political playbook is delay, 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 and kick every can down the road. And this is a case where for Trump, it's better that it goes faster.
Correct.
And for the rule of law, it's better for everything to go slower. And so, right, to the extent that every stay can be granted, everything can be dragged out as long as possible, right, that's better.
Yeah. They want to move fast to create chaos, but they want to create delay on the side of where people are trying to tell them to stop.
Right.
Okay. And that's, the consistency between that and what we saw last year when he was subject to the indictments and the lawsuits is chaos helps him. The more satellite litigation, the more confusion, the more procedural complexities, the more times you relitigate something that a court has decided and make up new arguments that are dressing up old arguments. I mean, the more confusion, the better. And right now, that's one thing that they're been successful in doing is creating confusion.
Can I ask you about the conservative legal establishment? So you such as it is, but you spent your life around these guys and gals. And I imagine your relations with them are somewhat attenuated in recent years, but.
Correct.
I mean, I assume you do have a sense of what the thinking is and what the room reads as. Do they look at this as, yeah, it's all going to be fine, don't worry? Or are there more Judge Ludicks out there? I guess this is my question.
I think there are
legal establishment types who are looking at this going, oh, crap.
Yes. I'll give you, I wish I could name the person, but I was talking to a friend of mine who is a liberal, but teaches a course somewhere, I won't say where in the country, with a very prominent conservative litigator whose name you might even recognize. And the conservative litigator is distraught about Trump and thinks that Trump is basically, ending the Constitution and that the Constitution doesn't really have a mechanism to deal with somebody like Trump. Actually, it does. It has impeachment, but the GOP has forsaken it and forsaken their Article I duties in Congress. And yeah, there are a lot of people like that. And there are a lot of people who just are sitting it out. And we're getting the worst of the worst in the government, with a few exceptions. I mean, and then there are people who are more concerned about their ambitions of holding higher office or becoming a judge. I don't know what the point of becoming a judge is in a Russian style court system. And the other thing that's sort of interesting about it is that the older the cohort is, the more offended they are. Because I think the younger conservatives go two ways. One is they don't go into the conservative legal establishment because they view it as corrupt and they go do something else. And then there are the people who want to promote themselves and move upward in that establishment. And then the people who are the most offended are the older ones, the Reagan types. Like, my organization that I founded in 2018 was Checks and Balances, Now Society for the Rule of Law. The stalwart people in that organization came of age. They were a lot of them were in the Reagan administration. Or like me, they were in law school when Reagan was president. We have a completely different vision of what being a conservative lawyer is, and that includes obeying the law, even if we don't like the law. You know, basically, it's we was like, okay, Congress passes a law. I'd rather they not have passed that law, but we're going to read the law to say what it says. And we're going to win. And if we want to repeal the law and stop the law, well, yeah, we can make some interpretive arguments, but they have to be consistent with the text and structure and the statute and traditional methods of statutory interpretation. And other than that, our recourse is, and maybe it does violate the Constitution if we have an argument that's based, you know, that's a reasonable basis, reasonably based on the history and text of the structure of the Constitution. But at the end of the day, the answer is to go to Congress. And they no longer believe that.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So we're also like 4 years out from having a rising class of conservative legal establishment for whom none of this is a switch,
right?
So if you are at your third year of Yale Law right now and you are a conservative aspiring lawyer, this is all you've known. Like this, yeah. This is conservatism and the intentional lawlessness of it is conservative legal theory, I think, right? Am I overstating this?
It is. I think you're overstating.
This is what you joined.
I think there are a lot of conservative types in law school who are appalled at this. They're kind of at a loss of where to go. And I don't think that we're getting to the point where the normal divisions between conservatives and liberals are having less meaning now. Okay. Because I mean, if you believe, you either believe in the rule of law or you don't, is what's happening. And we may have strenuous disagreements. Well, I mean, we may have
If you go to Yale right now and survey the 3L class, what percentage of them are going to not believe in the rule of law as you and I would understand it, but to believe in the rule of law as J.D. Vance understands it?
You know, it's a very interesting question. And I have not, I would love to actually go up there. And I think we got an invitation, my group, to send somebody up there. I think the Federalist types want us to go up there. Because I think there are a lot of people who are idealists who are lost right now. You know, but at the same time, there are lots of political hacks out there. Maybe not at Yale, but maybe at Podunk Law School somewhere. You know, in red state land, where
maybe
you know they want it. I cannot tell. I am not the person to talk to about the demography of conservative law student dumb today. My colleague at the Society for the Rule of Law, one of my colleagues might be a better spokesman for that. It's sort of an interesting question, but I haven't taken the pulse.
Lately. All right. Well, we'll see. I'm sorry. I got to step back here and ask the dumbest question in the world. Is DOGE constitutional?
No. I mean, Doge to the respect in respect of what it is doing now. Well, Doge, more specifically, whoever is running and directing Doge is doing so illegally.
Okay.
And
who is running and directing Doge? And I ask this question in a real sense and in a legal sense, because the president of the United States says that it's Elon Musk running Doge. the federal government's lawyers say they have no idea who's the federal government's lawyers say they have no idea who's running DOGE.
Well, actually, they changed their story. They did.
And they changed the story to Amy, right? To Amy. Right. And so, like, can you? Is it legal to have Amy Gleason running DOGE while Elon Musk runs DOGE and tells her what to, like? Is that legal?
Look,
if it's not legal, how do you stop it?
Well, okay, but very good questions.
Okay,
if DOGE is doing what we think it's doing, okay, and whoever is administering DOGE, whether they have that title or whether they're just doing so by virtue of the strength of their personality, if they are doing what, you know, if it were this woman Amy, or if it's Elon Musk. And remember, Elon Musk was the guy yesterday who was the first person other than the president to speak at the cabinet meeting and spoke at great length during the cabinet meeting. And,
while violating the Hatch Act, but that's cool. Nobody cares about the Hatch Act anymore.
Well, this is the same crew that held the Republican National Convention in 2020
at the White House,
the South Lawn.
That's what I'm saying. Do laws exist, right?
Do laws exist? Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, anybody who was paying attention to Shit Show One could have said it's going to be much more. Well, we did that. Nobody, people on the pods, our podcast, listen to us, but not enough. But anyway, the problem is an appointments clause problem. One of the problems, the biggest problem, is an appointments clause problem. And the appointments clause is that clause of the United States Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, I think it is, that talks about how you appoint officers of the United States. And what's an officer of the United States? An officer of the United States is something more than an employee. An officer of the United States is someone who exercises significant authority on behalf of the United States. It could be the Secretary of Defense. It could be the Secretary of the Attorney General. It also could be a U.S. attorney. It could be somebody lesser than that. It could be basically anybody who's not just a sort of run-of-the-mill employee. Where you draw the line between employee and officer is a tough question. But there's no question that if you are doing what DOGE is doing, you should be an officer of the United States if you're giving these directions. Not only that, and here's the problem there. All offices of the United States to which officers are appointed and are serving, those offices have to be created by law.
Correct.
That's the language of the appointments clause. And by law means by statute. Congress has to give, authority for offices. And that was that issue actually came up during the special counsel litigation that Trump brought, ironically, where he was arguing that there was no statute.
Yeah, Jack Smith wasn't an officer, right?
Wasn't an officer.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was exercising authority of an officer. And he was, it's funny, Donald Trump was kind of a stickler on that. Whereas, and the Justice Department came back and said, no.
And Eileen Cannon bought it, right?
Yeah. What?
Eileen Cannon bought it.
Yeah. And I don't think the 11th Circuit was going to buy it. And I don't think the Supreme Court was going to buy it, but here we are. There's no question that whoever is doing DOGE, running it, maybe even more than one person there has to be an officer. And those positions there were not created by Congress. They were created by President Obama when he established something called the United States Digital Service. And the purpose of it at that point in time was, remember, they had problems with the Obamacare website and they had to get some technical people on board to make it work. So that's one problem. There is no office for which the person, the office holder, who is not an office holder because he's not holding an office, or she, should be exercising this authority on behalf of DOGE that affects all these things in the federal government. That's problem one. Problem two is the Constitution, that very same clause, makes a distinction between inferior officers and non-inferior officers, which we typically call in the case law, principal officers. You can call them superior officers if you like. A principal officer is somebody who heads a department and reports to the president, typically. The attorney general is a principal officer. The difference between principal and inferior officers is inferior officers do not have to be Senate confirmed. Principal officers do. Now, United States attorneys are inferior officers. They are Senate confirmed, but Congress can provide that if it wants to. Doesn't have to. And in fact, sometimes a U.S. attorney can be appointed by a court, not by the President of the United States. Okay? You can, so, but a person who is a principal officer, Attorney General, Secretary of Defense, has to be appointed by the President to a position that's created by law and gets the, you know, the advice and, with the advice and consent of the Senate, is approved by the Senate. And let's take a look at, let's say Elon Musk is running Doge, as the President of the United States seems to believe and think and say. I mean, if you ask, I'd like to see somebody at his next press conference ask him, who's Amy? And he'd probably jump and say, what? What's an Amy? You know, she went on vacation.
A face like that, a face like a dog, right? I can't imagine that Donald Trump.
I can't imagine what he's going to say. But, you know, Elon is essentially operating in some respects like the chief operating officer of the United States. Who does he report to? He reports to the president. Or maybe the president reports to him. That Constitution doesn't deal with that. But
but it is an extra legal arrangement. Clearly, right?
One might say illegal. And he's basically telling cabinet officers what to do with the people in their department.
Yes.
So if those cabinet officers are principal officers that have to be Senate confirmed, how could Elon Musk, as the whatever of Doge, you can call it the administrator, although he doesn't technically have that title, as the guru of Doge, or just as whatever the fuck he's doing. He's whatever the fuck his position is, whatever you call it, he's exercising the authority of a principal officer of the United States, and he has no authority to do so either by statute, and he's not confirmed by the Senate. So everything he's doing is illegal. And everything he's done at his direction is illegal. And so that's what special at least employee. Two of the lawsuits are asserting.
Right. He's a special employee, and those things have a clock of, I think it's 180
days. 180
on them. Days, yeah. 180 days. Yeah. So what happens when that expires? Does he just stay? I mean, I guess,
what
difference does it make if it's expired or not, right?
And what
is the legal recourse, though? But what is it? So within the legal recourse to having this guy doing this stuff, which is anti-constitutional? Could have been constitutional if the Republicans who control Congress had simply passed a fucking law to make it so. It's not like he's doing this. Yeah. Like, it's not like, oh, he had to do it this way because
we're gonna, let's take a break now and watch Schoolhouse. Rock,
yeah,
right?
I'm just a bill on Capitol
Hill.
I'm
only a bill. Yeah.
Like they could have done this kosher, right?
Well, here's the problem, JV. Here's the problem. Republicans have been talking about doing this kosher for how long? 10, 20, 30? 40 years? And the problem is, you got to convince people.
Yeah.
Before you can vote and pass these laws, or else they're going to get mad at you. So, what better way to get this done than to pretend, oh, it's not my responsibility? What do you do there in Congress? I'm Ted Cruz. I have a podcast. I have a podcast. But the president, right?
Yeah.
They're just, you know, and that's one of the fundamental problems here is that you have basically an express abdication of GOP members of Congress and to some extent Democrats, frankly, of their constitutional responsibilities. We saw it through two impeachments, and now we're basically seeing it. They're basically ceding all their Article I power.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're starting to run long. I wanted to ask you about Dan Bongino. So Dan Bongino is now the number two at the FBI.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you about him vis-a-vis Mark Furman. So I imagine we have young listeners for whom the name Mark Furman will be entirely foreign to them. He was a major figure in the O.J. Simpson case. The O.J. Simpson case was the most important thing in America 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Kids, let me tell you about O.J. Simpson.
And, 30 years ago.
Oh, God help us. Furman was an LAPD cop who they uncovered a bunch of racist things that he had said. And the defense used Furman's expressed racism as a way to impeach the credibility of the LAPD, and all of this eventually resulted in O.J. Simpson getting off on the
criminal. Notwithstanding that there was hard and fast DNA evidence that Furman could not have possibly tampered with, since he's not a geneticist.
So one of the things that you can do as a criminal defense attorney is impeach the political priors of law enforcement. How is the FBI going to survive like criminal defense cross-examinations when you have a guy? I mean, you just call, if you're being prosecuted by the Department of Justice and the FBI was the agency running the case against you, why wouldn't you just call Dan Bongino as part of him and be like, yeah, I'm just going to show the world how much he hates people like me. And is,
yeah, I don't think that a court would let you call a senior agency official in a run-of-the-mill case unless that official actually had something to do with the direction to prosecute. But that
doesn't create any vulnerability for the FBI.
It creates a lot of it creates a lot of vulnerability. Here are the vulnerabilities it creates. One is they're driving good people out of the department. They're creating chaos and disorganization. And the way that's probably going to manifest itself is if we have a terrorist attack. You know, they're not going to, we're going to have people who have left the agency, and we're going to have people who are demoralized, and we're going to have people who are running around doing shit that they probably shouldn't be doing, like looking for, you know, people on Kash Patel's list. All right. So that's the way it's going to show itself in terms of prosecutions. You know, if it's a political prosecution, they're going to have to still prove beyond a reasonable doubt the elements of a statutory crime. And the other problem they're going to have is they're going to have to figure out how to replace all these people that they're losing. They're going to lose a lot of people who just are not going to want to play in this FBI. It's a problem. And this is going to happen throughout the government. It's going to happen in the civil division, the Department of Justice, the division that's going to have to defend all these crazy lawsuits. Well, it's going to be a problem.
Don't they want to replace the agents with Proud Boys?
It is. It's both a feature and a bug, and it becomes a bug because they're completely short-sighted. In the case of the FBI, you're going to, when they start hiring these Jan Sixers and giving them badges and guns, I'm not joking.
Which is a thing that is going to happen.
I was talking about it with a former FBI agent the other day, and it's like, yeah, they can do that. They may do that. They may start hiring Proud Boys. They're going to hire all sorts of people that we're not going to like. and who are not going to be, you know, by the book law enforcement officers. No. Okay. Then you're going to have the cross-examination problem, because you're going to have, you know, you're affirming you had a couple of things that they kind of dug up because they really dug and dug. But they're going to start hiring people who are just like openly racist or openly crazy and openly, you know, not law abiding. And then you've got that situation that you're talking about, JV, on cross-examination. And they have this problem in other parts of the government. As I mentioned, the civil division. How are they going to defend all these fucking lawsuits if these lawyers quit?
That is a real question, right?
I mean,
you do have to get competent lawyers. You can have incompetent people everywhere else, but you do in your civil division have to have competent lawyers to go out and defend the government, right?
And not only these agencies are understaffed to begin with. These people work hard. They have huge caseloads. Now their caseloads are burgeoning with complex expedited litigation, you know, where and they're litigating with not enough people, and then they're going to be people who are just departing, right? Because I mean, you know, let's take the public integrity division, which is on the criminal side. Those people, they're going to leave after what Bovee did to him, but that did to them. They're just gonna, you know, they may not be able to leave all at once, but they, you know, you don't think their resumes are floating around K Street now? Okay, so you're going to lose a lot of lawyers. You may hire a few crappy lawyers, but this litigation is just burgeoning, and you know, they are, you know, we're going to have an incomp of, you know, they may be competent at destroying things, but they're not going to be incompetent they're not going to be competent at winning things. And what we, you know, but basically where we're headed in all respects is chaos.
Yeah. Well, again, a history lesson for all of our younger people. The FBI used to be primarily involved in like domestic criminal activity, and Robert Mueller was sworn in as director about 2 weeks before 9/11. 9/11 happened, and on a dime, he had to reorient the organization entirely. Right. And he turned it into primarily a counterintelligence
and anti-terrorism organization. Yeah.
And they still do domestic law enforcement, but that's really secondary. It does appear pretty clear that the Trump administration wants to reorient it again towards political prosecutions, I think it's fair to say. And that's going to come at the expense of the counterintel and counterterrorism operations. It just has to.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, there's a finite number of resources. And whatever the FBI's flaws, over the last 24 years, it has done a very good job on counterterrorism.
Absolutely. And it attracted there are a lot of people who could have gone on to various things, including lawyer people who went to law school. I know decided to go
forensic
to the FBI to fight terrorism.
Yeah.
Forensic accountants, some very talented people went in to serve their country. And those people, they're not going to feel like they're serving their country by working for the FBI anymore.
Well, George, thank you. That was all super great.
Yeah, always cheery. It was,
yeah. I'm sure it'll all work out somehow.
Oh, just fine. Yes, yes, yes.
All right. In the meantime, we'll be back next week. Sarah should be back next week. I don't think I'll be here next week. George, thanks a lot. Everybody, thanks for staying with the channel because we're such balls of sunshine. If you're not with us yet, hit follow, hit subscribe, hit like. Good luck, America.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Listen close.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.